Well, hello and welcome, everybody. I'm out here at the T3 conference in Las Vegas and joined by Heather, CEO, amazing person, invests in a lot of great companies too. And I know you've been out here for a couple days and excited to talk with you on the FinServ podcast. One of the fun things about the FinServ podcast is really we're designed to talk to young professionals entering this space. And before I asked you to come on here, I saw that you actually won CEO of the Year, I think, this past year. And so I was like, okay, that's a good person to talk to about leadership then, because you don't win things like that unless you're a great leader. But thanks for coming on. And maybe give us the 10, 15 second, whatever it is, a bit about you and what you do.
Yeah. Hey, I'm Heather Fortner. I am the CEO of Signature FD. We're in Atlanta. We also have an office in Charlotte, North Carolina. We have a team of about 120 people between those two offices. We're about $8 billion under management. And I am very, very lucky and privileged to lead that team.
Yeah, you're everything I've ever heard. You're a great leader. And I want to hop into a little bit of that here today, which actually probably going back in your own thought, what was maybe a leader that you really admired and learned from when you came into, your working life or maybe even before that you looked up to and maybe got a couple good lessons from?
That's a great question. I don't know that I've actually sat down and said, there's just one leader that I really just focused on and said, this leader encompasses everything that I wanted to be. One of my coaches encouraged me when I first started working with him to sit down and think about 5 to 10 leaders and think about the characteristics or the unique value props of each of those leaders and what resonated with me about each one of those. And one example of that was Laura Bush. I really loved Laura Bush's quiet spirit that focused on literacy and reading, her passion around learning, and specifically her focus on young children. That just spirit of leaning into the development of the next generation was just one thing that I just loved about her and wanted to have that same type of spirit really about myself. And so there was just a list of leaders that I just kind of picked and chose qualities that I admired in each of them.
So let's dive into that one. So that learning spirit, how do you keep that alive? And do you foster that with your teams today too?
Absolutely. So professional development is one thing that we absolutely believe in. I am a natural learner. I really am, if I'm being honest, I'm my worst self when I'm bored. And so the challenge to learn something new every day, just to myself, I don't even really care what it's about. Just one new thing a day really just keeps my brain engaged. And so, I'm very fortunate. I've got some young kids at home, and my 7-year-old is very smart. She's teaching me new things all the time about, how I could be a better parent, how I could be a better mother. She's an animal freak and she loves animals. And so I'm constantly learning facts about that. But I think fostering that mentality in that type of environment at home has also translated into fostering that type of environment at work.
Well, I love animals too. And I found out recently that camels can swim really well. And so that this is the weird part of my thought. It's like there was some point when probably a shark saw a camel swimming and like, what in the world is this thing swimming around here right now? So I don't know, that sounds strange, but that's where my mind went when I found out that camels could swim.
I found out hamsters.
Okay.
We have a hamster named Cupcake, and apparently, she's reading all these books about hamsters, and hamsters are really great swimmers too.
So, okay. So hamsters and camels can go swimming together. I know you work with coaches. You've done that for a long time. How do you view accountability partners? I was asked about this actually this week. So do you use your coach as accountability partner? Do you use some of your team members as an accountability partner?
Yeah, I think about accountability partners, I would say more from the coaching aspect, because I personally want to be held accountable by people who have been there, done that, had the experience, have the training, and can push me to be better. I don't want to be held accountable just to status quo. I want to be pushed. And so for me, it's incredibly important to find the people and surround myself with the people who, quite frankly, will tell me the truth. Not tell me what I want to hear, but tell me the truth. And then push me to be my best self. That, to me, is more important than simply being held accountable to status quo.
So tell me a little bit about, because rarely does anyone start as a CEO and leader day one. So you have a journey to that and you're always developing. But what are some things that you actively thought about to develop in yourself as you kind of move more into leadership and managing a larger and larger team? I mean, I imagine today is probably the largest your team has been, which is always fun as like a CEO. It's like you look around, you're like, wait, but this is the largest company I've ever run. So I know it worked before, but I don't know it's going to work next. But what were some of those things that you focused on to become a better leader?
I think learning, constantly learning was obviously and is obviously still one of them. Secondarily, there was a period in my life where there were some things that I had to face, you know, just some things about myself. I had some pretty sharp edges, you know, and those weren't great necessarily for relationships. There was a time where I can move too fast and not be super empathetic to how other people are feeling in that moment. And I had to learn some patience. I mean, there were some real moments of reflection where I had to look in the mirror and be honest, really, with myself about who I was and what I needed, but also how I was presenting to the world and to the people that were closest to me. And so, you know, that can be kind of scary. It can be really hard to look in the mirror and be like, you are not your best self right now. You're not your best self right now. And you need to learn some new skills, kid. And I don't know how you're going to do that, but we got to go and we got to figure that out. And so interestingly, my word for this year, I always try to focus in on one word for the year. My word for this year is courage. And what does it take to be able to have the courage to look in the mirror, to be honest with yourself, and then to go do the hard thing that you need to do to be the best person that you need to be.
I'm going to hop on the word of the year thing because I love that. And I've probably heard it before, but it just resonates a lot with me till last week. And one of the dads that was on the trip with me, they do that as a family. Yeah. And they pick a word as a family. And then I thought the other fun part they did is they actually turn it into a mascot. So if, and I was like, so we're doing this now at home too. So if you're going to, your word of the year was positive. Yeah. So they created Positive Pickle and the kids draw the mascot. And so they have a mascot that goes along with the word every year, cool. Which I was like, that's such a cool that's way to involve the kids. So yours is courage. So who would be your mascot then for courage?
Oh, totally. It'd be a lion, right? Or, and I do have to say, this is funny because we're in Vegas. I learned last year from my coach that the buffalo is the only animal that when it knows a storm is coming, will turn and run directly into the storm to get through the storm faster. Because it's too slow to outrun the storm. And so, right? I'm slow. I'm not a runner. So really, that really resonated with me in the sense of you have to stop, you have to turn, and you just have to go straight at the storm. And so there are a bunch of slot machines downstairs that have buffaloes. It's funny, when you actually start looking for buffaloes, you find a lot of buffaloes. So I lost a dollar on the Buffalo slot machine. I am not a gambler. But interestingly enough, I think it would either have to be, you know, the courageous lion or the big old buffalo.
I know which slot machine. I can picture the one with the big buffalo on it. Yeah.
Buffalo Ascension, Buffalo Strike. I was like, what's up with the buffalo?
Yeah. Well, Samantha Allen, who worked on my team before, she has a really cool buffalo marketing story too. Or they like released buffaloes in Chicago or whatever to drive up attention around this company. And so it was like, find your buffalo, which is that like the buffaloes had nothing to do with the company, right? But it just drew all this attention. And yeah, it was super interesting.
Yeah, they're very mean.
Yeah, they're not nice. No. They can grow very affectionate towards people, though. There's some crazy stories about those as buffalo. So my uncle's a farrier, and he, one of the farms he had, the guy died, the farmer died in the field, and the buffalo actually like got him up on his neck and carried him all the way back up to the farmhouse. And so like animals, you know, we're talking about animal instincts. It's really amazing. Yeah. So that's what we've now renamed today's episode to Animal Instincts, because we've talked about buffaloes, hamsters, camels, a little bit about a lion. You've got the e-money pigs that are going home in the bag. So those are pretty cool. I also heard, and we'll tie this into leadership because I'd love your perspective on this. Somebody told me recently that, wolf packs, that the leader actually doesn't lead from the front. They actually lead from the middle, right? Which you probably heard before. And so how do you view leadership in that sense? Like, are you somebody who leads from inside the team, out in front of the team, from behind the team? Because actually, you can come up with analogies where people do all of those. Yeah. But where do you see your own form of leadership?
Yeah, I don't necessarily think about position when I'm thinking about leadership. I do often say to people that I know are running into a storm, I know this is going to take a lot of courage. I'm proud of you for having that courage, and I'm right here behind you. Like, I am here. I am the stopgap. If you get pushed a little bit, don't worry. Like, I'm going to be right here behind you. But this is something that you need to do. This is your growth moment. I think about leadership more. My personal mission statement, I worked hard many years ago to develop a mission statement because I honestly felt like I was less of a leader by not having one. And it's very simple. It is to love and lead exceptionally well. And I was at church one day and my pastor said, you know, there are some people who lead by loving and there are some people who love by leading. And I thought that was just, that has stuck with me. And I think there are also people that you are leading who need to experience leadership in a different way in order for it to be impactful. And so I think for leaders, the ability to pivot, the ability to be flexible of, does your team need you in the front at this moment? Do they need you running into the storm first? Or do they need to learn that they have what they need to move into the storm first, but just to know that you're right there behind them in the middle, ready to catch them if something happens? Or do they need you in the back, pushing them forward, telling them that they can do it, believing in them? Do they need to be loved in that moment? Or do they need you to stand strong and lead from the front? I think there are the best leaders that I have seen are able to understand individuals. They're able to understand people's needs. They're able to understand the organizational structure and pivot to the correct place to do whatever needs to be done.
I love that. I love your personal mission statement too. It's a really beautiful one. You mentioned to me earlier a little bit of this, as a leader, you can't just run off ahead too, right? So you probably shouldn't be the buffalo that just takes off by himself and herself and just ends up out in the field alone, right? You've got to bring everybody else along. And I think you said, you got to bring everyone, not just three or four people. So what are some techniques that you have found that help with that? Just on bringing the whole team along, not just running out and hoping everybody can keep up with you.
Yeah, it's really hard as a person who wants to go fast, right? Someone who, I just want to move quickly and I want to get a bunch of things done. And I believe in the vision and I believe in the mission. And I just think everybody is going to be super excited about it too. And honestly, when you feel that way, there's probably a lack of empathy occurring within you because you're not understanding where everyone else is coming from. And so for me, there's almost like an emotional pulse of the organization. And I talk about this a lot when we're thinking about change management. Organizations do go through lots of change. Growth, downturns, technology, processes, people change, all those things. Understanding where your organization is in being able to swallow that change, how much change, right, can your people, can your organization handle at any given time? And there's several tools you can use, right? You can talk to people. I have a series of coffees that I set up time to just be with people, and they sign up and we have these chats. There's surveys that you can do. You lean into your leadership team as they're having conversations. You lean into coaching. But understanding the nuance of pushing versus exciting people and helping them see the vision of how we're all going to be better and how we're going to be able to make impact, not only within our organization and our own families, but within the community, you know, that aligning to the vision is incredibly important.
We'll be right back with the show. But first, I wanted to tell you a bit about our sponsor and the production company behind the FinServe podcast, PodPony. Are you on the lookout for a podcast producer? How about a content boost or even someone to help take your brand to the next level? Well, let's face it, creating content and keeping up with a content schedule just isn't easy. That's where PodPony comes in, your all-in-one content partner for thought leaders and business owners. From media coaching, podcast production, blogs, webinars, newsletters, website support, social media, or any other facet of the content world, they've got you covered. From initial concepts and strategies to production and distribution, the experts at PodPony are with you every step of the way. They'll help you create customized content that turns heads and brings in business. All you have to do is show up and do what you love. They'll handle the rest. So saddle up with PodPony by visiting podpony.com and start your content journey today. Now, back to the show. So you mentioned change management, and one of the interesting things I've seen working at a couple different places, being a consultant and probably also for, you know, working with a lot of young people in FinServe, is not that many places get good change management education, training, even just kind of talk about it very much, right? Like, it's an interesting thing because it's super important, and almost every job and phase of life you go through requires some of it. How have you invested back into that for the company? Because you all have grown a lot, so you need to have some semblance of change management, whether you're actively thinking about it. But since you brought it up, it means you probably are using it. You have some process for it. How's that worked for you?
Yeah. So there is a full paradigm model framework for change management that literally outlines, you know, here are the different phases that people go through, that organizations go through. Here's how they experience change. And you can't just jump from phase one to phase four. Like, you have to go through these phases. Now, my professional training happens to be in professional counseling. And so understanding that at an organizational level, but then also at an individual level, you know, I've had professional training in understanding that, which has proved incredibly beneficial. But it is a skill. It's a framework. It's something that you can learn and actually apply to the organization and to individuals. And I think having a defined process around it is what makes people more comfortable with it, because it is no longer subjective, it is objective. I also really like to identify the one thing that will be the most impactful thing, because you can do a lot of things and you can have a lot of busyness and time spent and make very little progress. So being sure that you are focused on what is the most impactful thing so that you can very quickly weed out the noise and prioritize appropriately, I think is incredibly important. And then there's just, you know, getting the small wins, right? How do you eat an elephant? You eat it one bite at a time. And being successful actually starts to build momentum and excitement.
And so another animal reference. That's good. So we got elephants in too. Yeah. Did you use ADCAR? Was that the process you used on change management? Okay. Yeah. And so super interesting. And I started thinking recently, and I think this is a way maybe to some of the students that are listening probably have some change management taught if they're in a business school. But I actually started thinking about recently, like, should we take change management concepts and apply them in the financial planning process? So when you think about somebody retiring, it's literally if you took that as a project, it would be a change management project. So going from preparing to retire to actually being retired is that whole cycle of like the knowledge of it, accepting it, making decisions around it. So how do you all apply kind of, do you take any of those notions into the advice that you all are, you know, kind of delivering out to clients?
Yeah, I think that is where the behavioral finance aspect comes into the entire financial process, which really is the construct of bringing people and the emotions that they experience and how they're affecting change as it relates to their financial world into this planning process. And quite honestly, we as advisors, we can make the most technical, most beautiful financial design. And if a client can't emotionally get to the point where they can enact the pieces of that design, in my opinion, we failed as advisors, because ultimately that client is never going to be in a better place at the end of the day. And so that's why when I decided to get my master's degree in professional counseling, my belief was that in the experiences that I had had growing up, that you could know all of the financial acumen and tactics and strategies in the world, but if emotionally you were paralyzed by fear or paralyzed by anxiety or had some type of money trauma that you had never faced or were just scared, it didn't matter because you were never going to make the progress that you needed. And so I believe that there is a beautiful interaction of those two that is necessary for us to be as effective as possible.
So staying on the leadership theme, I want to talk about delegating and from two parts, though. So a lot of times when I talk to leaders, I think about, you know, a lot of leaders struggle to get to becoming really good delegators. I also recently started thinking about like, well, what is the experience when things are being delegated to you and how should you react to that portion? Because delegation is actually a two-party system, but often we talk about, hey, you need to delegate. And then I was like, well, what advice do we give people that are being delegated to, right? How do you shine there? When should you set boundaries? What do you need to get back from it? So I'd love to kind of, I mean, it's a kind of two-part prompt there, but from your journey probably to delegating, right? And then, you know, what have you seen as challenges or advice to people who are working under a leader who is delegating?
Well, let's be clear. I believe that healthy boundaries are always necessary, regardless of whether you're the delegator or whether you're the one receiving the work. I think that healthy boundaries around who you are, what you will compromise, what you won't compromise, what's negotiable, what's non-negotiable. I think healthy boundaries and the ability to communicate boundaries in a way that is still with love and caring and respect, I think that's like a whole different critical skill set that not a lot of people have. And I think our world would be a whole lot better if everyone learned, you know, the skill of setting boundaries with love. So that's one thing. But thinking through delegation, one of my mentors years ago said, you realize, Heather, that when you do it all, you're robbing anybody else of the opportunity to grow and learn and develop as a human. And if you go back to the original question you asked me, which is Laura Bush and the training and the leaning in and the learning and developing of the next generation. Like, that was totally against what I wanted to be and do. And so out of love, out of respect for the people in the room, I wanted them to learn and develop, but they have to have the opportunity. And if I'm doing all of it and not giving, like, that's on me. I think the second thing is just, listen, I am not the smartest people in the room. I'm not the smartest person in the room. I'm just not. There are so many beautifully brilliant people on our team. I don't ever want to be the smartest person in the room, because quite frankly, then I don't learn anything, right? And if learning is one of my goals, I want to constantly be learning from others. And every person in the room has a unique ability that is not mine. And I want them to lean into that and become the expert in that ability. So as a leader, the hard part isn't delegating. The hard part is helping that person identify what their unique value add is. What do you do that nobody else does? See it, harness it, and then find every opportunity for that thing and get that to them. Like, that is your job as a leader. And I just find that super exciting, because it's like a treasure find, right? Of like, oh my God, this person is so good. They are brilliant at this thing. Let's get everything over, because it will be 1,000 times better when they are working on it than if I ever did it.
Now, I think talking about like how impressive a team is that you put around you, obviously hiring and retaining talent becomes a really important part of that, finding the right people. So what are the things that you look for? How do you approach bringing in young talent when you're looking at somebody to say, hey, we want somebody to join our team, join our family? What are the things that you're looking for as a CEO and leader?
Yeah, I love young talent. I love old talent. I just love people, if you can tell. But when I'm thinking about people joining our organization, there are two things that I really think about. My core belief has always been that you can teach people skills, whether they're emotional intelligence skills, whether they're technical skills, whatever they may be. Like, skills are things that you can package up, teach somebody, they can put in their toolbox and take with them. It is very, very difficult to teach morality, to teach integrity, to teach care of others, to teach empathy. And so at Signature FD, we have 6 core values that are all around growth and greatness and grit and grace, you know, and generosity and gratitude. Those things at your core are very, very hard to teach. You can be reminded that those things need to be priority. But by the time you're early 20s, you probably are wired a certain way. And so we always take into account, hey, look, at your core, these are the values that matter to us. Everything else we can teach, right? But these values, they are core to our partnership. And if you don't adhere consistently to these values, our culture will weed you out. You will feel like you are in the wrong place, because you will be incongruent internally. And so really setting the stage, I mean, it's very similar to marriage, right? You have to be like-minded. You have to find those core things in your life, faith, finances, you know, all of those things that are just aligned, not the same, but aligned. And then from there, you rely on those core values to make decisions.
Well, I love those core values. A couple years ago, maybe 3-4 years ago, I did one of my little videos on what I termed the G3 summit, which was, you know, play off of that obviously, but was, you know, grit, grace, and gratitude. And I know Dr. Preston Cherry, who's on our board at FinServe, also likes to talk about those three. But I think those three really resonate, you know, that, you know, I love Dr. Angela Duckworth's research. So if you haven't read her book.
Phenomenal.
Yeah. So
her research on grit is unbelievable. If people have not read that book, they absolutely should.
Absolutely should. See, you saved us one edit there, too. It was great. But yeah, so if anybody hasn't read that one, check that one out. It's a great resource. Yeah, and actually, there's a lot of research that shows the most successful leaders and business people, they're able to demonstrate grit, yes. Which is a little bit different than just sometimes when people think about that, it's just like, it's not just like pain tolerance, right? It's the ability to move forward with purpose, which is different than, yeah. So I love that one. Well, I try to keep these around 30 minutes, so we're 29, 23 seconds. So I think I'll ask with this one here, going through my mind on what my closing question is going to be today. Well, yeah, I'm going to do two. So the first one is there a book or a resource, a documentary, something that's been really impactful to you that you recommend to young individuals coming into this profession that you just think is good to, you can take a second. And then the easier one's going to be, what is your favorite animal? Since we hit so many animals, I need to make sure that we actually get that across too.
My favorite animal of all time is the koala. Oh. And it's literally on my bucket list to get to Australia and hold a koala. And there's a show, because I have little girls at home, called Izzy's Koala, where she, you know, she lives there and she raises koalas. And that's like, you know, my dream state. I think one of the most impactful books that I have read specifically, I'm a huge fan of Dr. Brené Brown.
Yeah.
Dare to Lead is, if you want to be a leader, it challenges you at your core around vulnerability, courage, truth, those types of things. And, you know, I really think that, I don't know how leaders expect people that work for them to do and be emotionally intelligent if they aren't themselves. So I would suggest you all get started with yourself first, and lead the way on that type of work.
Yeah, and Dr. Brené Brown's amazing. Her website has a really cool PDF. It's about 3 pages, which is like a value worksheet. So it's free to download. You don't even have to put in your email or anything. You can just go right to the website and do that one too. So really wonderful. Well, Heather, thank you so much for joining us here today, talking to all of our young leaders out there and everybody else that joined us. So what best place to find your company or Signature FD and you?
Yeah, I'm on LinkedIn, Heather Robertson Fortner, and we are at www.signaturefd.com.
Well, thank you, everybody, and we will catch you later.